Hey, welcome to another exciting edition of Blog Talk Radio. You're tuned in to Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis Shipman, on a fabulous sunny May 1st, almost 70 degrees here in sunny Brooklyn, New York. And we hope you had a good weekend. We had an excellent one as well. And I wanted to discuss something that struck me. I was reading the latest edition of Essence Magazine. They have a fascinating issue of some sisters that are doing phenomenal work in the community. And I noticed that they had mentioned Janae Ingram. She sharpens one of his executives. She does something in D.C. I don't quite know what. We put in a call to Ingram a number of times, sent her a couple of emails regarding an initiative that Sharpton famously started with the late Mayor Koch of New York City, called Second Chance. You know, persons that have limited or no criminal justice contacts that get into the system, you know, for whatever reason, as long as it's nonviolent offense. What the initiative was supposed to do was expunge their record and basically allow them to say that they had never had that sort of contact. Viable idea. Would have been nice had he followed through on it. So what we did was we followed through with Ingram, and she never returned our call, never responded to any emails. And you know, Sharpton has a conference that's ongoing. I believe the last day is today. I believe it started Wednesday, so the last day would have been probably Friday or Saturday. And and he, you know, everyone has the right. I say this constantly. Everyone has the right and ability to reinvent themselves. So I'm not going to go into the litany of criticism of Al Sharpton. He is who he is. I know him very well. We're both Brooklyn boys. And, you know, all that glitters is not gold. That's all I can say. And I'm glad that he's prospering and doing well. In terms of being a leader in the African-American community, I would tend to dispute that. However, he might be someone that has access, or at least had access, at in the last administration. The Obama administration certainly doesn't have any access in this one. I believe he knows the current president, and who's might have spoken to him one time on a telephone, but that's the extent of the access that he has. So, you know, when we talk about leadership, we have to be result-oriented. It's not just about, you know, how many people follow you, or, you know, what kind of doors you can open for other people, you know, networking, that sort of thing. Certainly that's a component of it. It's an extraordinarily important component of leadership, but it's just a component. It's not the whole kit and caboodle. Character plays a large role in it, as does bringing actual tangible results. If we're talking about this singular program, we're not talking about anything else. We're talking about this very important initiative that would have started, or should have started, at least 15 years ago, if not 20. Charles Ogletree of Harvard, who used to be on Sharpton's show, he has a show that's syndicated for whatever reason, I don't know why, but at any rate, Charles Ogletree, the famous black lawyer from Harvard University, used to be on his show regularly. He was also, and I dare say, probably the main proponent of this initiative, but they all dropped it. Koch, Sharpton, and Ogletree. And I wrote a piece about this, and I think that what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a hyperlink and put it on Twitter And then you guys can go to the piece and read it. I don't remember what the name of the essay was, but certainly we'll post it and put it back up there. But this is important because, you know, a lot of times, you know, people who are famous or in the public's eye, you know, public figures, you know, often contend that, you know, they're famous by virtue of something that they have done or not done. You know, and there's a lot of people that haven't done anything that are famous. You know, they're just famous for no apparent reason, which shows a certain vacillity in our own culture, American culture, because, you know, if you haven't done anything to deserve the celebrity, why do you have it? If you don't plan on doing anything with the celebrity, why do you keep it? So this is the problem I have with this whole situation. Now I know that Sharpton runs a tight ship over there at National Action Network. And it was one young lady, and I definitely wrote a piece about this that he had on there, Tamisha Mowry, that was the president before Ingram took over, Janae Ingram. And Sharpton fired her. I remember when it happened. I remember the exact event that led to her dismissal. It was on the air, and they got in a spat. And I said to myself at the time, and I'll look at it. I think I'll post both articles, as a matter of fact, because I wrote a piece about it. And it was quite a few hits. And I said, that young lady is history. And sure enough, she was gone. I still think she has, you know, because she grew up in the movement. So I still think that she has some tangential affiliation with National Action Network, but it's certainly nothing formal. And so Ingram is well aware of that. And if you notice, Sharpton only hires women. You know, and the men that he does hire are typically behind the scene and silent. He's the only one out front, marring the English language to no end, and speaking for his organization, which does a little or nothing. The bottom line is this here. I've called the National Action Network just to see, the NAACP and the rest of these organizations, how they handle civil rights complaints. And the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, they do not. And if it doesn't involve things that are going to be impactful, impact litigation, basically they refer you to your local elected official. I kid you not. Don't take Dennis's word for it here on the Marketing Pulpit. Go and, God forbid, you have some sort of incident where you need to contact them, but that's what they're going to basically do. They're going to hear you out or not. And then they're going to refer you to your local elected official or suggest gratuitously, I may add, that you seek legal counsel, of course, at your own expense. So these organizations, you know, a lot of them, you know, with these figureheads that are just there to inflate their own ego and engage in intellectual masturbation, serve little or no purpose in our community. And especially with response or respect to an issue as important as mass incarceration, you know, is not enough to get on the radio and to wax poetic or philosophic about an issue that deeply impacts the African American community for a lot of reasons, much of which is driven by institutional racism and sheer unfairness in the criminal justice system. I'm not saying that everyone that goes through the system does not deserve to go through the system. What I am saying, however, is that whites often arrested and convicted for the same crime, if they are convicted, are not treated as harshly as African Americans. And I think that when we are paying lip service, using our celebrity to garner whatever more a larger audience, I don't quite know what the end goal is, because nothing ever became of that particular initiative that they announced quite famously. And you can go on our website. I'll have it posted probably sometime tomorrow. I'm not going to do it today. And take a look, take a read. It's really extraordinary because, I did not expect Ingram to call me back, because I knew it was another one of these things, just like the conference that Sharpton's having now, currently, or had just passed, ended on Friday, I believe. You know, where they come out every single year in April, and then he has all these luminary there, you know, then the Black Intelligentsia and broadcasters, journalists of note, authors, and, you know, everybody's just coming to, you know, commiserate and basically go home and do little or nothing, or to reengage with their own audiences. But, you know, in terms of advancing an agenda that helps black people, I haven't seen any evidence. And they're, oh, we're going to give a report card. Oh, we're going to do this. Oh, we're going to do that. And I never see any tangible, you know, having meetings is fine. But you need to have results. I mean, if you're a leader, you have to be result-oriented. Just like if you're a manager, a leader, you know, a stakeholder in private industry, you know, you're judged typically, not always, by your results, you know, your profits or your losses, your P&L. Certainly that's a gauge. So, you know, if you're talking about civil rights or human rights and that sort of thing, you have to be judged by your results. And, you know, getting someone a lawyer whose case is so high profile they would have gotten a lawyer without you is not, in my humble estimation, an indicator of leadership skill sets. It's really not. This is the problem that we have with the current administration. And in the African-American community, we really have to start holding our leaders to higher standards. And I said this when Clinton was running, you know, the DNC and the Clinton campaign refused to spend money, and their coffers were flush, audience, trust me. And there are no phone calls today. That's why I haven't given out the number, because this show is pre-recorded, so please don't try to call in. But at any rate, their coffers were flush, and they refused to spend money with East New York Management, Gatewood Marketing, any of us, you know, small or medium-sized media companies that could have helped promote the message that they wanted to get out, you know, whether it was doing narration, whether it was creating spots, that sort of thing. And I raised holy heck about it, and none of these so-called leaders, and I wrote them all. And I talk about this often because it's important. Because I don't hear any evidence from the current, you know, the incoming DNC leadership that they're going to change their stance on this about, you know, making the DNC use African-American contractors who comprise, you know, not the contractors, but blacks comprise a huge proportion of the Democratic Party. And this is what we talk about when we say that we're being taken advantage of, and we really are, because this makes little or no sense for us to continue in this country to vote down the party line, Democratic, and not receive anything in return, any tangible benefits, and you know, because that it was just outrageous. I just couldn't believe that none of these. You know, black talking heads, you see them on television all the time. I don't need to put anybody out on blast, or more importantly, to incur anyone's wrath. But fair is fair, and I think it's very unfair for these people who have access to get on national television and not mention the fact that the DNC, or privately. You didn't have to do it publicly. I mean, you could. They could have done it privately, and I see no evidence that they did it privately, because certainly we didn't get any call, and I don't know anyone else that got any calls, and nor did I hear any spots by black announcers or narration or advertisements, you know, ads. Those ads run into the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And that could have been an income stream that a struggling or fledgling a media company, a minority-owned, wholly minority-owned, or, you know, woman, African-American, Hispanic, disabled, vet, that sort of thing, could have really used those monies. And instead, it looks like it was the usual suspects that were given the money. Ogilvy's, you know, the big publishing, the big marketing, the big ad houses got that money. And there are some black ad houses still around. And I don't know how they fared. And I've asked the question. And again, it's something else that I talk about a lot. You know, it's us in our community with this crab in a barrel mentality that we don't want to share crucial business intelligence, you know, data that will enable us to build our bottom line. And it causes a lot of us to struggle needlessly, because a lot of the information that is being withheld is critical. It could show us that the direction in which we're heading is not one that is viable for us, or it's insurmountable. Let's take a break and come back on the other side of the break to finish talking about this. And we're back here on Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition, with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman on the mic. And we were discussing, you know, during the break, or just before the break, you know, leadership, and how even Sharpton, you know, we're talking about him. We're talking about mass incarceration and the Second Chance Initiative that he famously announced about 20 years ago now. And it had to be close to that, because Koch has been dead for quite a while now, you know, quite a few years. And him and, you know, Charles Ogletree from Harvard University, you know, about creating a legislative, you know, a path legislatively or through law, because that's the most viable means of getting, you know, policy change in this country. Because we are, quote unquote, a country of laws, is to do it legislatively by lobbying lawmakers. So I think they were trying to do it initially, you know, locally. By locally, I mean in New York, generally, maybe New York City, particularly. I'm not really sure how it was supposed to play out, because it was never fleshed out. And that's the problem that I had with it, because, you know, it's a major problem in this country. And then, you know, as we're, you know, some of these bloodthirsty states like Florida and Texas and down Arizona, you know, rush to put people to death. And we're sure there was one case, and I don't want to get into the death penalty debate here on the Marketing Pulpit. But you know, it's important that you know people get a fair shot, you know, or their day in court, you know, what we call in the law procedural due process and equal protection under the law. Both clauses that are contained in both the Fifth and the 14th Amendment in the Bill of Rights. So this is not something that we ought to be glossing over, just paying lip service to, because it impacts too many of us in African American community. And I didn't want to expend any I'm stretched thin as it is, but it's important, you know, in one's life to do something other than for oneself or even one's family. You have to become larger than your immediate family. And so, you know, in thinking about my next evolution, you know, I was working with a ministry, you know, in an impoverished area of the city. And, you know, unfortunately, and I can't generalize. I don't know why. Maybe the program is not well advertised. I don't know if you can put it that way. But no, you know, we had a tutorial. You know, I've been teaching for a number of years, and we figured that we could do adult basic education. You know, basically adult literacy, digital literacy, that whole nine, getting people prepared for work. And I could not get people to come. I mean, it was incredible. You had the teenagers, and then you know, their parents weren't interested. I mean, these are just obviously this is anecdotal and biographical. I am by no means using these singular students to extrapolate to the larger population. But these kids, you know, they were teenagers for the most part. I had one. And I'm not naming their names, so I feel free to discuss some of the issues that are, you know, really ridiculous, and it is going to hinder these young folk from becoming productive members of the community. But I know one of the kids was 18 years old, and I kid you not, he had no identification, none. So when I sent him down to take the pre-GED, you know, because once you get registered, then you could actually take the test and it'll tell you where you're at, or the pre-GED. He couldn't get registered. So, you know, I spoke to his father, you know, and first he didn't call me back. Then he said he did call me back, and I might have gotten messages. He might have left a message on a phone that I don't access, you know, because I have two numbers. Be that as it may, he was saying that he didn't have time or something, and the kid's mother or grandmother didn't have time to take him. He's 18. He's a grown man. I mean, he can't go down there himself, and he didn't even know his own Social Security. I mean, it's just this incredible stuff, man. You know, in psychology, we have a concept called infantilization, and this kid was clearly being infantilized. And, you know, you see evidence of this of what an entire generation, I would say the millennials, are, you know, really overly coddled and not well-disciplined, and their parents are used to doing every single thing for them. And I think the parents would be probably baby boomers or Gen Xers, but probably baby boomers, the tail end of the baby boom. You know, they'd be born in the mid to early 60s, most of them. And so, that yeah, it might be them, and it might be the Gen Xers who might be their parents who came after the baby boom. I don't even understand how they, you know, how you can have an entire generation that spans 20 years. That doesn't make sense. You know, almost 40 years from 46 to 64. That makes a little no sense. I think that, you know, persons born in the 60s should be part of Gen Xers. And, you know, but at any rate, that's a whole nother conversation here in the marketing pulpit. But, you know, the point that I'm trying to make is that, you know, this kid is being set up to fail. And then when he becomes fodder for the criminal justice system, them were the first ones out there, you know, crying racism, you know. And sometimes, you know, just like in, you know, in life, you know, with your body, you have to go to the doctor and get regular physicals to ensure that you don't have a major disease or something that's failing. You don't wait till the last minute to do it. Or with your vehicle, you know, you get it routinely or maintenance. You know, like one of our companies, Shipment Trucking and Transport, we have Class 8 motor vehicles, commercial motor vehicles, which are large trucks, and those trucks require preventative maintenance. They're designed for you know, high speed, long distance, under load conditions, to drive in those conditions, and they're designed to do it for hundreds of thousands of miles, and some of those trucks will give you 1 million, 2 million miles. Most trucking companies don't keep those trucks that long, but the point I'm trying to make is that if you want to succeed, you have to plan to succeed, or you're going to plan to fail. Listen, that's all the time we have for this week. I just wanted to give you a quick shout out, because we'll be pre-recording the show for quite a while, and we're still trying to figure out the technology, because we're looking for other office space now, but just bear with us, and we promise to continue giving you vital information relative to building your business or becoming successful. Thanks for listening to Mark and Pulpit. Have a great week.